Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we will be chatting with Jane Kirk about her book, Retired Books, How to Fix Your Retirement. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Sherry.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
I'm really happy to have you here. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are retired or about to retire who are too.
So hopefully they pick up the book and they'll find some tips that might help them.
I hope so. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your background?
Well, I always wanted to be a writer once I learned how to write. I had books as part of my life, and when I was 12, I tried to become Jo Marsh of Little Women. You know, move my bed to the attic and that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I never could quite figure out how to make a living as a writer. So I ended up going to work for an insurance company, among other things that I did in my life. And that was the last job that I had. And I stayed there for about 22 years and then got a chance to retire a little bit early, and so we took it. And my husband co-wrote the book with me, and he worked for the IRS for 25 years. And he got a chance to retire in his 50s and jumped at it.
So you and your husband both wrote the book, correct?
Yeah.
Does he have a background in writing too?
He's always written short stories, and he's a really good storyteller. He doesn't like to write. He's like, you know, just put it out there and it's good enough, and writers need to, you know, look at what they've got and then adjust this word and fix that word and make sure that what they put on paper actually says what they wanted it to say. And Randy's one of those people. It's like, it's out there, it's good enough. So his idea of fun is not writing, but he did a lot of research on retirement, and he did a lot of work on figuring out how we were going to make the retirement dollars that we have stretch. Things happened in retirement that made us question whether or not we would have enough money to make it the rest of our lives. And based on his research is how we decided that we had all this information that we wanted to share with other people. We were able to figure out how we could survive and thought, well, that was a great idea. And we had a lot of good ideas. Some of them were used, some of them we didn't. But when it came down to writing, to actually write the book, we decided that the two of us needed to work at it together because I had the background in English and reading, and I do a lot more reading of other kinds of books besides financial books, and he reads lots of financial books. So together we were a good team.
Hmm. But you said he writes short stories, so he must read some fiction.
I think I can count on one hand the number of fiction books he's read in the last 20 years. But that being said, he's a great storyteller. He likes to tell stories. So he's written some really good things in the past. It's not something like he'll write a story a month or a year even. But when he gets an idea, he's good at putting it down. But he'd say, I can't spell, I don't have grammar, I can't do any of those things. And I say, that's what you get editors for. You know, you have to have the story, and then editors will help you with the grammar.
That's true.
But if you ask him, he'd say he's not a writer.
And now this is something I always ask authors. Did you start writing for fun as a child because you were inspired by Joe? Or was it something that it started in school and it kind of like, oh, I'm good at this. Which course did you take?
I think it was probably a combination. I loved telling stories as a child, and I loved reading books. Books were my favorite thing to take to bed at nap time because I could read instead of nap, even the picture books. But when I discovered Joan Marsh, I was like, oh, my goodness, I can do what she does. I can write. And I hadn't really tried to write before. I just, you know, tell my sister's stories and make up plays with my friends and things like that. But I probably wrote two or three novels between being 12 and 18. None of them should ever see the light of day. But they were fun to write, you know.
That's funny. I mean, one of the things in Little Women, she brought a handwritten document with a bow. And the first time I wrote something, because I loved Jo. She was one of my favorite characters. And the first time I saw her on the screen was the June Allison portrayal. And so I asked my, it was on TV. I'm not that old.
I didn't think so.
But because they show it every year, it's like Christmas thing. But I asked my dad, I wrote a short story. I was about 7 or 8, something like that. I wrote a short story, and I said, okay, Dad, can you take this to be published? And it was like all in a little bow. He goes,
oh, that's
honey,
so
that's
sweet.
Not how it works.
Oh, did it work?
Yeah, did it.
Yeah, it's like, yep. It's like to be that simple, yes.
I know, it's like, it was kind of disappointing.
Aww.
But he said, when you get a little older, we'll work on it.
You had a great dad.
I did. I have two great parents that encouraged me in everything. And my brother, too. So very unusual, I know. But, yeah, I had a great dad.
That's nice.
Who encouraged you to write? Was it your family, teacher?
I had a couple of teachers in grade school who really encouraged me. And then not so much after that. I think my husband has been the one who's been and has encouraged me the most to pursue this as the next chapter of my life. You know, I've done the corporate America. I was a single mom for a while. I've made checked off all the boxes that you're supposed to check off as an adult, and made it through all of that. And now I've retired, and I can do anything I want to do. Oh, what do I want to do? Uh-oh.
Yeah.
And you start revisiting. And some of the books we read about retirement, so you start looking at what it was that lit you up as a child. What is it that you really wanted to do but didn't pay the bills so you didn't get a chance to do it while you were being a responsible parent and adult and all of that? And so this kind of brought me back to writing is really, it's what I wake up thinking about. It's what I go to bed thinking about. You know, I'll wake up in the middle of the night. I'm currently working on a murder mystery, and I'll wake up in the middle of the night going, that's what they should do. And have to get up and jot it down and then go back to sleep. But it's, you know, I am an accomplished artist. I'm a sculptor and paint and all those things, but that's more of a hobby. It's fun, but it's not something I get up thinking I need to put this idea down. And the writing really does take me out of myself, and I go places with books that I've never been, and I get a chance as a writer to take people places they've never been or give them ideas and show them different ways of looking at things.
That's
and I
very
really like
important.
That.
That's very important because that's something that it seems to have gotten lost in translation. That one of the things that's wonderful about reading stories specifically is that it takes you places you've never been and never probably will be. You know, I mean, you're not going to go into space. Right. Unless you're very lucky, you're one of the elite few. You're never going to go back in time. You know, there are very few time lords that will grab you and bring you along as a companion. But that's what books are for. It's to take you places you've never been or to help you understand yourself better. And people mm-hmm. who say, oh, I hate to read, I'm like, well, you're not reading the right books.
Right. You need to find things that are interesting to read.
Exactly. Or interesting and interesting to you.
Right.
I remember that one of the things is like if someone is interested in sports, you have to get them a book that it's a real book, but has to do with a character who is about sports. I mean, that way they're interested.
Right.
Simple.
I did that with my son when he was growing up. If you're forced to read something, you're not going to like it. You're not going to like reading. I think the trick is finding an area of interest,
mm-hmm.
especially when you're trying to get children to read. Finding something they can relate to or captures their imagination. And I think for adult readers, it's more of a finding something that is intriguing enough that they'll want to spend time doing it because people have so many demands on their time.
That's true. Yeah, I used to get asked, how do you read books and write and do all this? And I go, if you love it, you make time for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
You know, I worked full time. I was writing, reading, doing all kinds of stuff. And I still had time for my friends. People say, how did you do that? I go, because I make time.
Yeah, you just pray, you know, there's always time to do the things that you love. They're
mm-hmm.
important to you.
Very.
I mean, I always carry a book in my purse, even before they had electronic books and Kindles and, you know, things like that. They made paperbacks that would fit in your purse.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I was standing in line, I'd pull out my paperback and read while the line moved. Or, you know, having to sit in the doctor's office and wait, you pull out a book and read while you're waiting. You know, you can read a lot of books while you're waiting.
I got to tell you, that reminds me, when I was younger and I was going to dances, I was not the most outgoing person. It's not that I wasn't outgoing. It was that I was shy in large groups. One-on-one, two or three, that was fine, but large groups always made me revert to being very shy. So I used to take one of the pocketbooks and put it into my clutch.
Yep. Sounds like something I would do.
And then I'd find the place with the best light, and that's where I'd sit, and then I'd sneak my book out, and I put it up. You know how you cross your legs with the skirt, and you put the book
mm-hmm.
right there, and I'd start reading?
Oh, that's good. I think that definitely beats my... being in class while everybody's reading, you know, reading the primers, you know, whatever, the whole class is reading out loud, I would have another book propped behind the book that everyone was reading.
Mm-hmm.
I got in trouble so much for that. But I'd be reading the book that I wanted to read, but I'd still keep track of what everyone else was reading and be able to read when it was my turn. But I got into trouble a lot of times having a book hidden.
I still have a problem with books. I was forced to. I'm a bookaholic. I love books. I read all kinds of books. I still have a problem with the books I was forced to read that I didn't like. I mean, one of them is a very popular movie, The Hobbit. I hated that book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was forced to read it in, I think it was first year high school. I was like,
oh, dear.
You know, it was so. Ugh, I could not, and everybody, oh, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, and I'm going, uh-huh.
Yeah, no, not anything. I think it has to do with being a teenager, you know, first year of high school, and being forced.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have mattered what it was. You wouldn't have wanted to read it.
Yeah, it was pushed on me. I mean, probably if I discovered it on my own, just through my usual roving through the library, which I did a lot, I also worked at the library when I was in high school.
I did, too.
You did, too?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. You could have a book behind the counter when it was slow,
mm-hmm.
and you could read, and it was full with the librarian. She was fine with it. She goes, as long as you're reading and you put it back in the exact place you got it, I don't care. And you take care of the people who come in.
Yep. Sounds like a cool librarian.
Oh, she was really nice. She was a lovely, lovely woman. You know how you read these books and you watch these movies and the library is always this mean lady who's telling you to shh all the time? Ours was young and cute and funny and nothing like that.
That's so cool. Yeah. Stereotypes are very seldom real, but they persist.
Oh, yeah.
It's easy to make. We love making characters into villains.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And they always have these looks on their faces, and they're always mean. And I'm like, no, not the ones I've known.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time at both the public library and my school library, and I never met a mean lady.
I think maybe the author's, because he or she has to, uphold the rules. And that makes it easy to make them into a bad person.
Interesting.
Makes it a good caricature.
But it's so silly.
Yeah, it is.
But if I found the book, if I found Hobbit by myself, I probably would have liked it. But because you were forced and you had to write a book report and you had to have it in by a certain time and you had to read it out in I didn't mind the reading out in class. I liked to do that. I just didn't like to be forced to read a book that I had no interest in.
Yep, that's always a bad idea. But we do that
the other book,
in school all the time.
The other book I was forced to read that I still can't stand. And they made a really good movie, and I liked the actor who was in it. I still can't stand it. It was called The Red Badge of Courage. It was about the Civil War.
Yeah, I remember that book.
It was another book I couldn't stand. And I love Richard Thompson. I think it was Richard Thompson, the one who played in The Waltons.
John Boy.
Yeah. He was the lead in it.
Right.
And I loved him. It was at that time that they made the TV movie. But
mm-hmm.
I just hated the movie because I hated the book.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know.
I suffered by association. That's not good.
Yeah. Okay, we've come to the plugging time. So I want you to tell the audience about your book, what they can do with it. Remember, we only have about 10 minutes, so we can't talk that long. But, give as much of a selling thing as you like. And please tell them where they can get it. Very important.
Okay. First of all, the book is available as a Kindle book and as a paperback on Amazon. That's the only place it's available. And it's basically kind of a guidebook, a handbook. We've loaded it with information that we researched on how to make your dollars stretch for housing. We looked at the most expensive parts of your budget, and for housing and transportation and health care, those kings. We looked at tweaks and things you could do to stretch your dollars. But it starts out with, you've got the first thing you have to do if you're in an underfunded retirement, unless you've got, $500,000, you're pretty much underfunded. You need to take an assessment, figure out where you are. And then think about what it is you want to do in retirement. And then you can figure out creative ways to get from where you are to where you want to go. Say you want to vacation in Europe, but you can't come up with the money to spend a week in Europe. But you can find ways to maybe exchange your house for someone's house in London. They want to come to Los Angeles and you want to go there. There's lots of different avenues for creative travel. And that's just one example. We looked at the most common pain points and things that we were finding in our lives. Our retirement was in jeopardy because our insurance went up 18% 2 years, 3 years in a row. And we didn't figure out how this is not sustainable. We can't keep doing this. So we had to look at other ways to make our dollars stretch. So in the process of writing and doing all the research, we decided to write the book and share the tips that we found. So the book's full of, like I said, links to places that we found that you can go, there are resources that you can use to do more research on your own to find out what you want to do. You know, for example, if you wanted to rent out a room over your garage that you never rented anything to anybody, there's a link to a website, a blog, that'll tell you all the steps you need to take as a potential landlord. And so it's that kind of thing that we've got. Not sure. Do you have any questions that you can think of from what I've said? I don't want to go too overboard here.
It's very good. I'm curious about the travel part that you were saying. How does that work?
There's a number of different entities out there, I guess you will. There's Airbnb, I'm sure you've heard of that,
mm-hmm.
where you can rent a room in somebody's house. There's also an online program, and I have to look up in the book to see what it is, but that will help you swap out your house for someone who wants to vacation. So you swap out vacation houses. So if you want to spend this week in Paris, and someone living there wants to spend a week in Los Angeles, and this website will help you meet each other and do some checking on each other, and then you can arrange the swap.
That's like
there's
that
a couple
movie.
A couple of different systems like that.
That's like that movie, The Holiday. With Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet, where they switched houses
for
a week, I think.
Yep, it's the same kind of thing, exactly. And
it sounds intriguing.
There are countries, people all over the world who will do this. I think the key is finding somebody who wants to vacation at the same time you want to vacation where you live. And then you want to go where they live. One of the things we did in the book is any website we found like that is listed in the book so that you can explore it yourself. You don't have to go Google it all. We've mentioned a couple that are really good, and we've also mentioned if we found some that didn't have good ratings.
Hmm.
So we tried to give some feedback based on what we found as well. I think one of them...
Go ahead. I was just going to say,
go ahead. I'll be quiet.
No, you go ahead. I was just going to ask you another question. If you haven't finished, go ahead.
Oh, that's on a different topic.
Oh, go ahead. No, what's the topic?
On healthcare, one of the things that I was surprised that we found was that there's such a thing called medical tourism. And there's actually a company in, I think it's Maine, it's based in Maine, it's a grocery store chain that actually will pay for their employees and a companion to go to another country to have knee replacement surgery or hip replacement surgery rather than have it here in the United States because it is that much cheaper. They can afford to pay for the medical tourism part more than they can to have them have the surgery here. And there's a lot of that going on. And there are a lot of countries that have, there are places that specialize in certain types of surgery, and they're accredited by the American Medical Association. There's also accreditation by Canada and the United Kingdom's medical associations for several places. And, again, we give the links in the book about how to find out more about this.
That's
so, for example, a $300,000 operation here might only cost you $70,000 someplace else. It's a significant difference. And a lot of insurance companies are getting on board with this.
That's
as a way
really
to,
cool.
to hold down medical costs. Until we started researching the book, I'd never heard of this.
I've heard of it. I didn't know that it was here in the, that they were doing it. I knew that they were doing it in Europe. I didn't know they were doing it in the States, the insurance companies. We don't have a lot of time. Do you have any kind of appearances or online events that you want people to know so they can talk to you or get to know you better or sign, get, buy your book and have it signed?
I have a website, jlkirk.com. It's my author website, and I try and keep things updated on that. I don't have any appearances or anything like that scheduled for right now. Every so often we try and do a special 99-cent offer on the book, but it's not very often. It's a couple times a year. We tried that just before Christmas to try and encourage people to buy the book and give it to their friends. So, and it's just for the ebook, not for the paperback. But
that's cool.
And I'd love to hear from people. We have a website, retiredbook.com, for just talking about the book itself. And love to hear from people on that. We have a sign-up sheet.
Okay, great. My last question I ask everybody, what is your great passion in life?
Oh, I probably have two.
Okay.
My husband, he's amazing. He keeps life from ever being boring. I never know quite what's going to happen next. And then writing. I can't wait to see what my characters that I'm currently working on are going to do next. And in the next book after that. And that's it. That's
cool.
It keeps me pretty busy. Keeps me pretty happy.
That's great. That's what it's all about. Well, thank you, Jane, for being on the show. I really appreciate it. A half hour does go very quickly. I hope you enjoyed it.
It does. Thank you so much for having me, Sherry.
Thank you.
It's been fun.
And thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.